CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. To Europe, to the headlines from Europe, straight turmoil, country after country, especially the giant pieces of the European Union, Germany and France. I begin with Germany. Transport strikes brings much of Germany to standstill. The walkout, one of the country's biggest in decades, is part of a wave of labor unrest sparked by higher prices in Europe. Matching that, continuing, is the turmoil in France. The headline again, French protests grow volatile in test for Macron, the president of France. More than 13,000 police officers were deployed across the country for protests that were expected to draw more young people. There's been destruction of property. There's been burning of city halls. There have been physical threats. That's France. And then to complicate the story of the telling of the EU is an alert in Northern Ireland, not a member of the EU, about a terror attack. This disturbs all the water in Ireland and across the EU. Where do you look for calm? I look to Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She is in Berlin, which we're told is at a standstill. All transportation is said to be participating in this strike. Judy, I begin by saying we want to speak of the just-concluded Putin-Xi summit of the bad actors in Moscow, but my checking on France and Germany, is this unusual scale of protests that we're experiencing now, or has this been something that's happened before and it's cyclical? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me on your show. Well, these are two very different countries. Let's take Germany. These are big strikes caused by inflation, firstly, and led by a new leader of the railways, the public transport. He's a very old social democratic civil servant, and he's been in the union, trade union movement for a long time, and he wants to test his muscles. But they have a grievance. But one thing you should remember about Germany, yes, there was a standstill yesterday. The buses, by the way, kept running in Berlin, but the airports were affected, the trains were affected, and people having to get to work were affected. But at the end of the day, there's a whole politics and structure and old tradition of both sides, the employers and the employees sitting down trying to hammer out an agreement. So this was a warning strike and it's stopped for the moment. But this is typical trying to get a consensus. Your listeners should remember that what's happening in France is a reform of the pension system in which people will work a little bit longer. And you must remember the attempts to reform the pension system, the working hours, has been going on for a quarter of a century. And presidents have fallen on this extraordinarily complicated issue. One doesn't know why, frankly. But what we are dealing with in France compared to Germany is a revolutionary tradition where they go out in the streets and they fight and they fight and they fight. So these are the two big EU countries, both very different political cultures, and now they're finding ways on how to reach some kind of peace, frankly.
We go to Moscow immediately because your column reflects on what we know about that meeting between two challenging masters of their countries. And what we now see is the continuing war in Ukraine. No peace talks in sight. First, you make very clear the old order is broken. The old order of Europe. Is that something we can say existed in 2019 and it's not coming back, the old order, Judy?
The old order is over. It was over after 1991, where the West, NATO and the EU deluded themselves that we could perpetuate the old order by somehow integrating Russia. Well, we know what happened. It didn't work. This old order of a kind of détente or coexistence of the West being able to set the rules, this is over now because of the entrance of China. And this is what the summit between President Xi and President Vladimir Putin was all about in Moscow. It was about establishing a new order where there would be a serious competition on which which structure of power and which distribution of power would win. I think this is emerging now, and the West should really understand what is happening.
You write that Putin is using crude ways to break the will of Ukraine, but at the same time, the will of Ukraine is difficult to separate from the will of Europe. So what is the challenge now by the meeting of these two overlords? Is Western unity? How's it doing, Judy? Are these strikes in Germany, are these violent strikes in Paris, is that evidence that Western unity is breaking down?
No, these are completely different elements of a domestic political agenda. In fact, the European Union and the member states are actually not only holding together over Ukraine, but militarily, they're supplying them now with more military support. And also, we mustn't forget that the European Union is committed to actually eventually bringing Ukraine into the European Union. This has changed. This is a very special relationship now evolving between the European Union and Ukraine. At the end of the day, of course, with support from the United States, whatever the outcome of what happens in 2024, whatever the outcome, the European Union and the European member states are going to be and have to be committed to Ukraine because they know what is at stake. A defeated Ukraine will lead to actual instability and insecurity of the European Union and the Eastern Partnership, those countries that are east of the European Union but not members of the EU.
Another part of the old order that is challenged, if I follow your analysis, is U.S. supremacy. What is the opinion in Berlin, Paris, and other parts of the European Union? Is the U.S. now the supreme military and diplomatic power, or has it been taken down more than a few notches by Ukraine?
Actually, the role of the United States has been very important in terms of its military and financial and economic and political support for Ukraine. And it has been a major psychological benefit for the Europeans to actually support Ukraine and not sit on the fence and not be ambiguous. The American support has been really, really important for this. Whether it's continue after 2024, one hopes so. But at the moment, what's interesting is that since the United States leads the NATO military organization, NATO has become much stronger, much more confident. We've seen Finland entering the NATO now after the ratification finally by Turkey and Hungary. Sweden is waiting, but NATO is certainly stronger. United States, for the moment, is absolutely behind Ukraine. But there's a caveat. They want the Europeans to take far more responsibility for their security. This is not about separation of NATO. It's about the Europeans really contributing to this security and thinking strategically.
You also write that part of the assumption of the old order, and perhaps to be part of the new order, but that's the battle, is territorial integrity, part of the astonishing assumption of the community of nations that thou shalt not invade. That's been broken. Is it coming back? Can it be established again?
Well, the United Nations General Assembly certainly voted a majority for recognizing and legitimating the idea of territorial integrity. It's been fragile, but it's part of the UN Charter, and it's still the DNA, the raison d'etre of not only Western countries, but other countries who actually feel threatened, whether it's from Russia or from China, or indeed from other countries, whether it's in Latin America or Africa. But territorial integrity and sovereignty are actually the bedrock of this universal view of stability. And this has been certainly shattered by Russia, and President Xi of China is quite ambiguous towards it, actually. He's on the one hand, he recognizes the territorial integrity of Ukraine. On the other hand, you know, he's got his neighbor, Taiwan, to think of. But for the moment, this idea of sovereignty and territorial integrity, what the Ukrainians are fighting for, is actually sacrosanct.
What does it mean to the European Union if Ukraine is seen to lose the contest in Ukraine? What would it mean immediately for all of these capitals?
It's Very difficult to say, but firstly, the Kremlin would feel emboldened to actually flex its muscles more in Georgia and in Armenia and in Moldova, which are part of these Eastern Partnership countries, which are not in the EU, but straddle the European Union, firstly. Secondly, there's a great fear that this could be an unstable cordon sanitaire, a new kind of Russian kind of wall between the European Union and Russia, with these countries, the countries in between. Thirdly, they will be highly unstable, very insecure, and there'll be an awful lot of young people and reform movements who will actually rebel against any kind of Russian interference, even more interference, because there's interference enough. And fourthly, it will actually test the unity of the European Union, because there'll be some countries that say, well, this is a fait accompli. We now have to get on with Russia. This is the new power again in the region. And there'll be others led by Poland, the Baltic states, the Czech Republic and Slovakia say, no, we cannot let the old order return. We've got to push ahead and actually make sure that we do everything possible to make our Eastern neighborhood stable, secure, and slowly integrate them into the European Union.
We're going east to the Eastern Partnership in just a moment, but one more speculation. If Russia loses, is there a plan, Judy? Do you hear talking about what is to be done with the remnants of that dictatorship?
Nobody can answer this. And those who believe it'll get better will posit their own ideas when Putin is gone. And then there are those who believe that if Putin goes, it'll lead to more chaos. We simply don't know. There's a huge struggle going on inside the Kremlin and outside with the mercenary elements, with don't forget the pockets of civil society outside Moscow, with the parents who have lost so many of their sons in this war in Ukraine. This is so unpredictable, one simply can no longer speculate.
Judy Dempsey is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's based in Berlin, where we're told Germany is at a standstill, but there will be a better day. It is springtime. We're going to turn to that Eastern Partnership next, because right now there's a new threat, immediate threat. Vladimir Putin says that he will deploy tactical nukes to Belarus, the Minsk dictatorship of Lukashenko. What does that mean for the Eastern Partnership, for Eastern Europe, for Poland? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.